The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Harris Stowe State University or Black Radio Hall of Fame.
Africans at home and throughout the diaspora, unity is strength. We got power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We for UNITY.
Cool. Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
fighting. Right now, right now.
Now we've got to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
That's right. That's right. We are going to do it right, y'all. We can't have any missteps here, given what's going on in this world. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And we are live here at Black Radio Hall of Fame and at Harris Stowe State University, our only history black college university here. So we have a full show and, you know, it's about an issue that we don't get a chance to have enough discussion of it. If you recall last, 3 months ago, we had one on the South African elections. And, you know, we know there's lots of upheaval there, but it seems like there might be some hope that the African National Congress has got an awakening by its people who have lost faith in them. So, you know, a lot of stuff going on. So this is about Africa. We're going to have some guests here who are very knowledgeable. One of them is on his way due to an emergency. But in studio, we have Kamari Sanofu that we had in the studio. Well, we haven't had in the studio before, but he's been a guest. So welcome, Amari.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, as usual, I'm always honored to be a guest on your show because for me, you are an icon. And your voice is very important in terms of the St. Louis community and the conscious community and the activist community is concerned. For those that don't know me, my name is Amari Sanofu. I'm the UAPO Minister of Pan-African Affairs and a 11-year member of the ADC, which is the African Diaspora Council. My buddy is on the way here. Is the Michael Kojo Anani. He's the president and CEO of the African Diaspora Council. And like she said, a little mercy, but he'll be here. And it's a very, very interesting organization because they actually help a lot of Africans get situated here in the United States that come from the continent. And we've come together this particular occasion to talk about coming event. It's going to be here in St. Louis.
So, Amari, why don't you talk a little bit, too? I know that was the African Diaspora Council, but talk a little bit about the Universal African People's Organization.
Well, the Universal African People's Organization was founded in 1989 by Zaki Baruti and Sophia Chavan, and they are still in leadership position, and they're matter of fact, Zaki was in Ghana a week ago, and he was doing a show. He's always busy. And the Universal African People's Organization is an organization that's made, it's basically a political and cultural organization. It's not religious based. And we pretty much got our hands in everything. We've done help around the world in terms of helping African countries in need in terms of sending books and supplies. We've helped Haiti when they went through some earthquakes. We send water tablets and things of that nature. So we've done quite a bit over the last 36 years. So we've been busy. And we've also been a partner to your organization, OBS, out there on the battlefield.
Yes. And so, you know, one of the questions I often ask guests to center Africa is part of their political work in organizing this. Why is Africa important, and particularly now, given what's going on in the world, given who's in the White House, why is Africa important now?
Well, Africa is important to the whole world. It seems to be that Black people seem to be the only one that didn't get the memo. You know?
Yes, that's why these shows are important.
Absolutely. And because of the Africa is so rich in minerals and resources. But not only the minerals, you know, we're talking about the diamond, the cobalt, the uranium, all of those things.
Diamonds.
Yeah, the diamonds, gold, and so many things. Like, for instance, uranium is needed to run nuclear plants. And places like France, their power system is based on nuclear plants. And they can't produce it, so they get it from Canada or they get it from Africa. And so everybody wants to get their hands on Africa. Not just that, it also has probably the biggest beach lines in the whole world. You know, it's a beautiful place. But in the media over the years, it has been demeaned and torn down. And the people that live there have been abused and slaughtered for hundreds of years. And so that's important for that to be done in order for people to take what belongs to us. So Africa is very important to the world, and everybody wants to get their hands on it. And it was an organized effort back in 1884-85 with the Berlin Conference, where Europe essentially divided Africa up for themselves and sliced it up. And the borders that you see in Africa today are due to Europeans organizing in a meeting that only lasted a few months. I believe it was December of 1884 to February or something, 1885. And those 3 months, European leaders got together and decided that they were tired of fighting each other. And so they divided Africa up and had a plan to go in and take over a whole continent. And they have been successful. And those borders that are there today are as a result of that conquest. And in my mind, I won't feel like we're completely liberated until those borders are removed and we see ourselves as a unified nation. Yeah.
Absolutely. Those borders are artificial. They've been imposed by the imperialists. And having said that, because the division was between the main European countries, so a lot of the countries are, you know, some of them called Francophone because they were colonized by France, and so they are French speaking, and sometimes that French, you know, culture is incorporated into African culture. The whole slogan that used to be said about Britain is like the sun never sets on the British Empire because they had so much of Africa. Talk a little bit about the role of neocolonialism in the unification or the attempts to unify a continent.
Yeah, you know, it affects us today. You know, my father did a DNA test, and it's kind of figure out where our family was from. And a lot of 35% of our blood was in Ghana, from Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire. So I'm picturing Ashanti. And but Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana is people. And so our people have been divided by those borders. On one half, the Ashanti people may be forced to speak French, and then on the side of Ghana, they're speaking English. You know, I had a friend that went to Africa and attempted to live there. And she had a 10-year-old. And she said when her child went to school that the children weren't allowed to speak Cree, which is the native language of Ghana. If they were caught speaking the native language instead of English, they would be suspended. And that blew my mind. You're in Africa.
Right.
And you're not allowed to speak your indigenous language. So that's the extent of colonization. It's not just taking of the land, it's the taking of the mind. Where the African people are learning more about British history than they know about their own history. There's a professor over there now that's teaching, and he speaks several languages. He's a linguistic training, And he discovered that even in Ghana, the people that speak Cree, they can't write it. So he literally teaching them how to write their own language because they haven't been taught, but they know how to write English. So that's the level of disrespect. That's the level of oppression that the world, you know, due to the fact that we have the internet, and, social media, it's unacceptable. The knowledge is getting around and people are not tolerating the people on the continent. They're not tolerating it. And we just have to organize ourselves and unify with one another to not let the political adversaries have their way in terms of the psychological damage and the separation of people that's taking place over there. You have a lot of Africans over there that's bleaching their skin. And there's a lot of Africans over there. I think back in the late 70s, early 80s, blacks in America, you know, we got into a black Jesus. We got us a black Jesus. And, you know, people talk about revelations and the description of Jesus being black. In Africa, they're still pushing the white Jesus. Boy, that's odd for a country that's all black.
Let me just say something right there, Mark, because there was a young person who was going to divinity school. Mm-hmm. She really wanted to be a faith leader in this country. And she went to one of the African countries, I can't remember which one, and she went to a church that had the white Jesus. Mm-hmm. And for her, it was traumatic. Mm-hmm. Because the assumption for her always has been they are about spirituality, mm-hmm. they have their own deities. I mean, when you think about the Europe, you know, it's double deities. I mean, so she's expecting that right. they're going to be practicing African religion. Mm-hmm. And to see a white, blue-eyed Jesus on the wall, it was a pivotal moment for her because mm-hmm. then she decided, this is not the career path for me. And she made a decision right then that she was not. So I think, you know, the more that we talk about Africa and mm-hmm. the colonization and what it's meant, that people will get a truer picture of the continent. I know when my first time going there was back in the early 80s, and people were asking me, like, ridiculous questions, and I'm a black folk, mm-hmm. about, will I be in the jungle?
Wow.
and fearful of spears, like, being thrown at me. And I'm thinking, okay, you all have to remember, these are countries that have been colonized. So capitals of commerce are for the Europeans. So, yes, mm-hmm. they have modern hotels. Yes, they Absolutely. Have modern buildings. Yes, they have water systems because it's for them. And so the African people there get a chance to benefit from that based on them being there, colonizing them. So it was just this whole like backward mindset of Tarzan and all of that, that mm-hmm. even in 1980, and I suspect still that black people still don't have a true picture of the continent. The other thing I wanted to say based on your talking about like the whole divide and conquer, not being able to use your language, practice your culture, this should ring a bell because we saw it happen with Native Americans here. Mm-hmm. They would not let them speak their language. And to the extent that you talked about having to relearn, a lot of the tribes are doing that right now, teaching the younger people how to first of all, speak it. But also to write it because it's a lost art. I mean, it's not even art. It's like how people like communicating mm-hmm. with each other, but it's gone. And we saw the same thing happen with Chicanos and Mexicans. Like, you know, don't come over here speaking that stuff. Mm-hmm. You better learn English. And so we've seen how the deculturalization happens all over the world. It first starts with you can't practice your language or your culture. That's your connection to who you are.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, this is not new stuff, y'all.
You know, it goes way back. You know, even when the Greeks invaded what we call Kemet, ancient Egypt, the first thing they did was they call it Hellenized. They Hellenized the people, meaning that even your religious systems where you practice, you had to use Greek words. You couldn't use your own words even to practice your own traditions. So that's a part, that's really a science of colonization.
that has worked.
And it works. So once we learn the system, our responsibility is to counter the system and to be strategic. And that's where maybe some of the leaders now, some of the younger leaders like your Ibrahim Traore, Burkina Faso, is learning how to do. He's playing chess. Because in the Western world, we know that Westerners, they have enemies. They have political enemies. And so the French, and you talked about Francophone, and you talked about how I think it's 14 or 16 countries that are controlled by the French. And the French have been nasty, really nasty in their form of oppression. And so people rose up against it. And what makes it complex is people say, well, aren't you for democracy? So they say democracy is though that's the, like that's some type of a religion, but democracy can be corrupt as well and is often corrupt because a lot of times if somebody's running for office and you don't know that person personally, you go by the media and the things that you hear in the media. So if the French want their particular puppet to be in power, even through a system of democracy, they will flood the airways promoting that individual and you still have French control. And so democracy in that context is not real. It's not good for you. And so young brothers like that, they say nonsense, nonsense. We're not having it. We're tired of being exploited. And so Assimi Goïta from Mali and the leader of Niger, Captain Traore, which is, they overthrew their governments, and they're trying to get the thing set right.
Yeah, they started the Alliance of Sahel States.
Absolutely.
So the three of those countries are like, we got to be together. Because here's the thing, Amari, it's almost like here, if you are trying to set a different path, and all around you are vultures snapping at your heels, and inside of your country, there are the enemies of the people who are being financed by the neo-colonials. And I would also add our own country, the CIA, whose disabled organizations killed African leaders for decades. And so for a young leader, he's only 37 years old, to say, here's the path we're going to take, automatically sets him up as a target.
Absolutely.
So how do you see somebody like him who's surrounded by, you know, some of these, you know, neo-colonialists who, you know, it's all about the money and them staying in power. What's his prognosis for survival?
Well, I think he's a chess player mentally. He knows that the West has opponents with each other. And say the Western Europeans, were the primary exploiters of his people. And he know their enemies are the Russians. And I want to be kind of careful with this because people think a lot of people that support, you know, African revolution, they don't fall into the trap of believing that the Russians are somehow, pro-African.
And I would say that there's a difference between Russia and the Soviet Union.
Exactly.
So be careful of that because there was a time when the Soviet Union was very supportive of African liberation. I don't know that that's the case right now.
Well, yeah, it's all a chess game because he who controls Africa controls the world in terms of technology and minerals, resources. And so when the Western Europeans had major control of Africa, other Europeans want to get in because actually the Russians were left out of the Berlin Conference. They didn't get a piece of the pie.
Right.
And so now that the French and the Westerners are getting expelled from Africa, don't fall into this man is playing chess. He's not saying that I'm in love with Russia. He's saying that I can get resources and even security support, protection from your enemy. Because without that, I'm very vulnerable, but that doesn't mean I'm totally committed to anybody. And he sets it up by doing business deals. Like he wants to build a nuclear plant in his country. And before he came into power, Russians and other countries was exploiting him for gold, things and you know, and other resources. And so he stopped all of that and said, hey, you can buy the gold. You can buy the gold, or we'll make a deal where I'll let you mine gold in exchange for you building me a nuclear plant. So he's doing it, and he's gotten things from the Chinese in terms of you know, military vehicles and what have you, because he knows that that relationship, playing the game of chess, can provide enough protection so that he can build and develop his people without playing chess and saying, well, all y'all the same, which could be true on the end of the day.
Right.
But you have to play the game, political game, because we're so vulnerable.
And think about where he's coming from. He's mm-hmm. coming from a country that was steeped in neocolonialism.
Absolutely.
And had the claws of the imperialists there. So he's got to clean all that up before he could even move forward. So he's got a hell of a challenge before him. But I think because he's young, he's steeped in, you know, liberation strategies that, you know, I'm hopeful. Now, I did hear something about some army went in and killed some tribal folks. And again, this is going to be my next question for you. Where are the sources to get true and accurate information about the continent? Because I don't know that that's true. It could be, because I know just based on what we talked about earlier, when you have these artificial boundaries mm-hmm. and the tribalism has been instigated over centuries,
mm-hmm.
that stuff is not easy to, like, dismantle.
Right.
All of a sudden, I'm looking across the Mari, and you used to be, you know, this. And I'm like, now we brothers, and I still got all that rolling around in my head. Like, what's that Negro up to?
Right.
You know? So again, it's for this brother to take hold. He's got to do some deprocess and dismantle of psychological. And whatever is going to be coming through from his enemies, including AI, because I read somewhere where somebody took created a video mm-hmm. allegedly made by R. Kelly and put my man on there and say R. Kelly supports this. Well, of course, right now R. Kelly ain't the most popular person in America. So they're doing all this
yeah.
kind of stuff to disrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think we got to be very careful about that, because it happens in this country. We get black leaders and all of a sudden there's all this negativity and then we end up, you know, I don't know about her, I don't know about him, mm-hmm. you know, they said, they meaning white media, and then next thing you know, those people are either out of office, you know, been shamed. And again, the same practice that's been used on us over and over again. So where do you get your news about Africa?
Well, well, I study Africa, and then what I do is I pay attention to what is your interest. And when you look at what everybody's interest is, you can kind of see what's going on. You can tell what information is valuable and what information is not. When it comes to that brother, the leader of the Burkina Faso, his big issue was security. You had a lot of these Islamic terrorist groups. I think it was about three major ones. It was attacking his country and keeping his country destabilized. So, and here's the thing, you know, the United States got AFRICOM.
Yep.
And here's the thing that's not really being told, but from the ground there, they know that the United States playing a big role in keeping those terrorist groups armed and destabilizing their area. So when he stood up to wipe out those, you know, to neutralize them and get that in check first, so that his people can have safety and security, the response, you can see the response, and you can tell who the enemies are, you know. And then when, as he was successful at doing so, and he knew he had to get arms from some enemies of the West in order to do that, get support from the Russians in order to do that, because there's been several assassination attempts on his life since he became president. And so he has to play a delicate game but he's a great communicator. Even though he doesn't speak English, he speaks French. But now the technology, the AI allows us to hear his words word for word. Like he responded to the United States general went over there. I mean, who was before Congress answering questions just a couple of days ago. And he actually called out Captain Troy's name and implied that he was corrupt. And it's been a groundswell in Jamaica and other places around Africa. There's a groundswell. Keep your hands off of this man. And I think that we need to get into that, too. We need, because we know how they move. Like I said, the Russians have been supporting them. But that's not to say that I'm a fan of Russia, because the United States domestic policy and the United States foreign policy is two different things. I always say that domestically, the Republicans are a big threat to black people, right? But even the slow ones, because like I said, a lot of those Trumpers, they're kind of slow. But they're still a big dangerous threat to black people.
Now they're in power. Yeah.
They're in power. But in on the world stage, those slow folks are not the biggest threat. It's the liberals on the world stage in Africa, because they're a little smarter. And like I say, and when that brother came before Congress, you know, only thing I could think about is Clarence Thomas. This guy's Clarence Thomas in a uniform. For him to single out where they, and just think about, they always use one of us to lead the charge and colonizing and exploiting and controlling our people. And President Traore spoke to that. He said he was disappointed that the brother, this is what he said yesterday, I'm disappointed that you would allow
small
yourself.
People, right? Yeah.
And he asked the brother to he should apologize. Or he also said that, he gave him out. He said maybe his staff made a misinformed him about us.
This brother, so giving him out.
He's giving him out to apologize, but this, he's saying there's no corruption here. And so I'm saying playing the chess game, communication is important, because ECOWAS, you know, organization ECOWAS, are very nervous about not being strapped to European powers, because like you say, we don't know how much control the Europeans have had in terms of their leadership. And so it's very, very, it's a lot going on.
It's a lot going on. And I'm really urging people, when you see headlines, think about what Amari just said, because a headline will draw you in and have you draw some conclusions that are very false. And so one of those headlines was that Captain Ibrahim Traore, you know, slaughtered, you know, Islamic folks. And so then you said, oh, here we go again. Black folks can't get together. Well, some black folks, you know, all skin folk ain't kin folk.
That's right.
And so, yeah, so your explanation about what actually happened then neutralizes that headline, because it looks like now he's getting ready to be a dictator and he's getting ready to slaughter anybody that's opposing him, as other neocolonialists have done. And so that's why I think it's important to talk about where to get your information. So for me, I get mine from African World News, which is UAPO's organ. I get it from African World. I get it from The Final Call, Africa Report, Al Jazeera. And so then there's times when people who know that I'm interested in a certain thing about Africa have already vetted an article and they'll send it to me. And I know that that's probably legit. So I don't think you could just blindly look at a mainstream media headline or article and think, oh, wow, that's what's happening. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. If you're just joining us, this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And I am here talking about my favorite continent, Africa. And we're here with Amari
Sneferu.
And hopefully soon we'll be joined by Michael Anani with the African Diaspora Council. But, you know, Africa, as we've been talking about, is so key to the world. The resources are, at this point, seem to be never ending. But these people have been exploiting that continent for couple of centuries, well, not even a couple of centuries. And at a certain point, I'm suspecting that the oil is going to dry up, the diamonds won't be there. And then those folks will leave the continent
bone dry.
And then say, look at these folks, how they govern. They can't even govern themselves. This is what they often do, like after they messed it up. And then they say, see, they can't govern. That's why they don't need to be ahead of anything. So, you know, when I think about, again, the media and I see articles like I saw this thing about how these ghost writers were writing articles about Africa, and they were linked to pro-Russian propaganda, mm-hmm. but all this was happening in West Africa. So there's ways that they target different regions, different countries, different mm-hmm. leaders, so that it raises enough doubt in the people's minds that they start to turn against their own folks, even those ones who are fighting for their liberation. And this ain't the first time this has happened. We've seen it happen here. But there's also this whole issue of, and this is why I said we got to be looking at what's going on. I saw this thing about how drones have killed over 1,000 civilians in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about? You know, when I think about drones, like the thing about drones, we have folks who got access to drones. One of us could buy a drone. Mm-hmm. So who is killing these civilians? You know, what's going on with that? You know anything about that?
I really haven't read a lot on the drones, but I do know that, you know, Barack Obama, you know, used drone strikes in Somalia. You know, so it is a weapon that's being used by militaries around the world. But one thing about, Traore is that he's trying to he's really done a good job of getting all of these most advanced technology to his disposal, especially spy technology and security. He got great surveillance technology. So his spy game is very elite. That's how he's able to keep up with all of these attempted coup. This is a new world.
This is not 1950.
That's right.
This is like, you know, modern technology that some of us aren't even familiar with.
That's why, you know, it is so important that we start with developing a bond between, Africans in America and Africans on the continent of Africa. That relationship has to be put together. And a part of the efforts here by the African Diaspora Council is to unify the African diaspora with the Africans from the continent, because there is a schism. And so we're doing things to bring us together and unify, and be able to dissolve, you know, the division, and then bring us together. And so this program that we have coming up is a part of that. It's really a part of the total effort. On the top of the flyer, if you take a look at the top of the flyer that was created to promote our upcoming May 24th event, you'll see a theme that says Africa Without Borders. And, sister, here's the reality check. That we must seriously come to grips with the fact that African people throughout this world will never be respected or protected until the continent of Africa is unified as a sovereign nation and respected as a world power. And of course, that's not a new idea.
Not at all, because I think about the the African People's
Revolutionary Party.
No. Back in the 60s, when the African UAO, the Organization for African Unity, where organizations came together, and it seems like when that attempt is made, these racist imperialists double down and try to disrupt. And so there's been fragmentation of that, and then people try to reconstitute something else, like the brother has done with the three countries. But why is it important for African countries to unite?
Because again, Africa without borders, that's the goal. And those borders represents our limitations, represents our challenge to overcome the division. And so, you know, people like Marcus Garvey understood that. Kwame Nkrumah, the first president of Ghana, understood that. Patrice Lumumba, the first president of the DRC, understood that. And the other first presidents of African countries also understood that, in spite of the fact that they had countries with borders. But those borders were nefariously imposed upon Africa prior to their presidency as a result of the Berlin Conference that we talked about earlier. But today here in the African diaspora is literally about building bonds of trust with our African brothers and sisters socially, culturally, and financially. A black-owned federal credit union, for instance, would not only benefit the local black families with home ownership, small businesses, or car loans, but it can also facilitate, on a larger scale, perhaps in the future, an economic relationship between African manufacturers on the continent and the global distribution of their products via the hands of the African diaspora, serving as retail distributors. But building a bright future begins with establishing economic and cultural bonds between Mother Africa and all of her children, no matter where we are in the world.
And we're all over.
Absolutely. So they're in a very vulnerable position, the Africans that are from the continent here, because especially during the time of Donald Trump, that you can easily be deported.
Exactly.
So they have to also play chess. Mm-hmm. They have to be careful how they move. But the goal is a positive goal, to create stability and unity between the diasporic Africans as well as the ones on the continent.
And Amari, I know that every time there is a liberation struggle, and this is going from the 60s on to the present, and when asked, what can we do in this country to support you? The number one thing has always been, get your own damn government together and stop them from meddling in our affairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, contributions and money is fine, but that is the number one thing that keeps coming up. And that came up during the anti-apartheid movement. Mm-hmm. Like, y'all's government is not just a boogeyman. They are a real monster
exactly.
on this planet in terms exactly. of how they infiltrate, how they murder, how they plunder, all of that. Get your government together and we will start to see a transformative change on this planet, particularly in Africa. And I always remember that. So when people start saying, what can we do? What can we do? Start with that person in the White House, the Congress, who making plans, who control the Pentagon and the dollars that go towards that, even in Gaza.
Do you remember what's his name? Mika Brzezinski's father, the big new Brzezinski.
Oh, yeah.
He was a Polish-American diplomat who served as a counsel to President Lyndon B. Johnson and served as Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. Mm-hmm. He stated his concerns in the 1978 National Security Memorandum about blacks in Africa uniting with blacks in America, perhaps not being consistent with American interests. I only pointed that out to say that it's not in anybody's interest but our own to work together with our brothers and sisters from the continent. What better opportunity for us to initiate those kind of relationships than us to come together, have programs, network, get to know one another. You know, Brother Michael and I, we're a similar age, and, you know, and I've gotten to know him, and it just feels like he's a brother. You know, because, you know, there's some distrust between.
Oh, absolutely.
And so you have
artificial distrust, I might add.
It was premeditated mm-hmm. and created before we even got to know each other. But right. once you get to know each other, you know, people keep their distance and then they start to open up a little and you learn that we are brothers and that you care about one another quite a bit. And to me, that happens by being getting to know them and having a personal relationship with them and then start building with them. We're going to be making a very, very special, huge announcement at this event on May 24th. A huge announcement. I don't even want to let it out because
it can't be a scoop on this show.
You gotta come on out. I'll put it this way. It's going to be historic. And it's very, very significant in terms of financial development for us, financial institution building for us. Okay. I'll probably let a little bit out the bag.
No, that's fine. That'll be a teaser.
We really made a great achievement. There he is. There he is. My brother.
You're not late, you're on time. So like,
you're on time. Yeah.
So one of the things I thought about, Mari, was when I heard, for example, that the governor of California, they actually have more investments with countries than the U.S.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, bing, 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 bing. Mm-hmm. What would stop us from having not just foreign relations, but economic relations with different countries as a city, as a community that does not require U.S. involvement? And so when the U.S. is talking about we're not going to send any money for those fires, he could probably do without. California could probably succeed and still be okay. So I'm thinking about all the ways that we can make those connections. And I know a lot of times people, you know, do it and buy African clothes, but it's got to be deeper than that. It's really got to be an economy that's going to support not just the livelihoods of people, but our survival on this planet. I'm going to stop I hope you caught your breath. Because we've been going out there looking for you. He ain't in that parking lot yet. So who we have in the studio finally, y'all, is Brother Michael Anani, who's the president of the African Diaspora Council. And I don't know if he could hear our conversation while he was driving around trying to find us, but welcome. So we've been all over the continent, haven't we, Amari? But we really want to hear from you to talk about the importance of Africa right now for you, given the fact that, you know, we got a fool in the White House. I would say I'm gonna do like I always do. We have a psychopathic liar and a convicted felon in the White House. What does that mean for Africa and its existence?
You know, all this is just a matter of time. What is going on right now in Africa on the continent is something is overdue to take the leadership in our own hands instead of waiting for people to hand you fish. So finally, I think talking about the independence of the continent in general, we know that independence is not really independent. Independence is a real thing that you can be, you depend on yourself. That's what we mean. So the reason why we left the continent to come here, because of mismanagement of their resources, where our presidents are managers of the West countries, and they're managing our resources and giving it back to the West, and we are starving in the country. So finally, that's a good example right now Traoré is doing, and showing and proving to everybody that it's doable. We can do this ourselves. So all we need right now is to collaborate, work together as a team, and get that done correctly to alleviate fears and other things that Traoré will be by himself doing it and thinking that, oh, I'm single and somebody will hurt me, or whatever happened in the past, like Thomas Sankara, happened to Thomas Sankara by himself, and he's doing the same thing right now. That's the reason why he's pushing hard to make sure that all the leaders come together as a one block to take over their continent themselves and take care of their citizens.
What do you think is his greatest threat right now in his attempts to do that? What is his greatest threat? What are his challenges in doing that?
The greatest threat, honestly, is Western countries.
Come on. Like it is. And the Western countries, let's be specific about that. Who is that?
Like we all know, Burkina Faso is colonized by French. So West African countries, mostly the French countries, French-speaking countries, France is the main problem we have on the continent. If you look into every corner where the French is, English is over there. Nigeria is doesn't suffer like the way French-speaking countries are suffering. So French is our problem. Everybody knows that. But the fear of talking about it is the problem that we have. We know the problem, but we fail to get the solution to apply to it. So if people come together, the president of Kenya said, we are tired of that. One person somewhere else in the Western world and said, hey, I want to talk to African, I want to talk to African leaders. And 54 countries, 54 presidents will line up in front of a young man and shaking hands and taking picture, and that's all. And then they go back. They bust them again. They go back to their places. It just doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. It's shameful. Yeah. It just we are grown up. We older than that. We educated more than that.
Yeah. More sophisticated now. Yeah.
I don't know how much time you have, but I know we definitely have to tell you about this fantastic program that we got coming up.
Yeah, please do.
This
because the theme itself is so powerful.
It is. It is. Africa Without Borders. It's Africa World Day 4. World Africa Day is celebrated all throughout Africa. But we are now beginning to celebrate it here. But this particular event is going to be at St. Louis University on May 24th. And it's going to have quite a few things going on. We're going to have a great panel discussion by scholars from around the country. We're going to have a cultural events like cultural dance performances. We're going to have African fashion show. We're going to have an exquisite dinner. We're going to have a jazz, live jazz music. And we're going to have a keynote address by PLO Lumumba, you know, an esteemed, really the most sought speaker in terms of Pan-Africanism in the continent of Africa, and really beginning to be around the diaspora. So we definitely want folks to come out. It's going to be located at the Bush Student Center, St. Louis University Bush Student Center, the Wool Ballroom, the WOOL Ballroom, at 20 North Grand Boulevard, St. Louis, Missouri, 63103. And that the parking is free. And so we want you to be able to, you can go online and get your tickets, for the event.
Where is that?
At the African, you can go online to africadiaspora.com and you can purchase your tickets there. Click on the QR code for this event, or you can purchase your physical tickets by simply calling Sophia at area code 313-454-7227.
So I know it's a big time span. It's from 2 to 9, and you talked about the number of activities. So the ticket price covers all of that. So maybe you might not be able to come to the 2 o'clock thing, but you come to the banquet. All of that's covered in the $50.
That's right. And there's also opportunity to win some prizes.
The raffle.
You got the raffle. You can win. Third place is $300, second place is $500, and first place is a trip to Hawaii. So that $50 might turn into something special.
Yeah. So keep that in mind, and remember that We're going to get an event up on my website so that you can go to that. I know you're not going to remember all of this. But we got some plans for y'all. This is the rest of this month is really busy. So we're going to start with this Saturday, and we're going to move all the way to the holiday weekend, which is the African Arts Festival. So this weekend is the memorial service for our warrior sister, Martha Jane West. That will be at 2 o'clock this Saturday at Lane Tabernacle Church. And so those of you all who know her, please come out. If you didn't know her, you missed a hell of a giant. But yeah, so that's coming up on Saturday. Sunday, I think you get a time off on Sunday, but on Monday, UAPO is having their event. You want to talk about that?
It's the 36th annual celebration of Malcolm X. It's going to be at Legacy Cafe and Books at 6 p.m. And there's going to, yourself is going to be one of the speakers, Marla Rogers.
So are you.
Myself, Stan Jennings, Amalia Yesiteli, and Farrakhan Shigog, and Shamin Hubbard is also going to be one of the speakers at that event. So come on out at 6 p.m.
So I just want to say about that, because one of the things for those of us who became really politicized in the 60s, we celebrated African Liberation Day. And for the Organization for Black Struggle, we often did it with a Malcolm X celebration, because Malcolm is the one who talked a lot about our connection with Africa. He often talked about, like, why we were disconnected.
That's right.
He mapped it all out, like the colonized mind came, right. You know, so we need to lift him up. And I know UAPA does that every year with the African program. So that's Monday at Legacy. On Tuesday, the Organization for Black Struggle has their Uwazi political education, and that will be at 6 o'clock. At the Rowan Community Center, that also will be up on the website. This is a session every other month that deals with political education, so that we begin to study. We somehow have not been as disciplined as we should be when we start to understand the world around us, and so our enemies count on us not being informed. On Thursday, I think Wednesday is. You get a free day on Wednesday. But on Thursday is the Standing for Democracy is having their working groups now. They're doubling down on actually doing the work. They're going to be mapping the right organizations who represent the right, because they've done that with us. They know each of our organizations, got us up on the website there. We don't know who they are. So part of the working group is going to be mapping the right. The other one is developing a plan for preparedness and security for our organizations and our communities. The other thing, we're going to go right on into the African Arts Festival, which is all about Africa. It's going to be, you know, dance, food, you know, celebration of our African selves. And so that is going to be at Forest Park. It's always at the World's Fair Pavilion. It's free to get in. Of course, you want to patronize all of the beautiful vendors and the stuff that they're selling. So don't come empty-handed. Come to support. So that's like 2 weeks of good old stuff happening, y'all. That's no excuses. Some of it is free. Some of it is cost, and the costs are justified because freedom ain't free. So I think the last thing I want to be able to say is give the last word to Michael to say, what do we need to know and believe about the unification of Africa?
Thank you, Ms. Jamila. What we need to know, we need to know that Africa is a continent. It's composed 54 countries. Our unity was long time speeches, action missing. So sometimes ago, I think like a 5 or 10 years ago, somewhere else, the African Union declared that the continent itself is composed with 5 regions. So, and the regions are the West African region, Central region, Eastern region, the Northern region, and then the South region. So, and now see that the children of African descent, we are outside, those who are in the diaspora, we are also one region. So we become six regions to make the continent one continent. And they also see that they see clear, but the action is still missing. They see that the continent cannot be developed without the six regions, without the diaspora, those who are in the diaspora. So now that's a struggle. Let's come together. Let's do it. That's the struggle that we are doing right now. So we need to understand that the calling to come back to the continent is yes, but how do we go there to participate in the development of the continent that we are talking about, our home? So that's where we come in to send the message out that we are all one people. We need to come together and take back our home and participate in the development. The diaspora participating in the country for the development, it doesn't start with us. If you look at Israel, the diaspora, a lot of them invest back home.
It's required.
Yeah, it is. Even though in the Bible, somebody say in the Bible, Jesus coming down is in the diaspora and they will go back home and to prepare the place for us to go back. That's the way it is. So all these things are things that if we sit down and think that, oh, we're missing this. That's why the continent is like that. So if we all go back or we participate in a conversation, what is going on in the continent, people see that these people are united now. So there's no way you can break their back.
So the five regions, those countries that are in those regions are committed to this unification process. That's not new. This is not a new concept. And so how is it different from previous calls for unification?
The past unification that they were talking about, just the words. Mm-hmm. The action, they don't want to see us coming together as a people.
Absolutely.
Action. So now is the time. We know better now. We are the children. We need to take that action. So that's the reason why our meetings, our African Union meetings are attended by Western world representatives, and they don't want us to take that action to unite ourselves. So when it comes to action to unite ourselves, they come in and say, no, this is not the time right now. So now is the time for us to do that.
So because people like us are in the sixth region, the diaspora, what is our role and responsibility? What should we be doing now?
Thank you again. That's what we are doing here. How do we participate in the development? First of all, we need to come together as a one block. We in the diaspora, we need to develop our social platform as a one people. Now we can take that to coming together our social platform and then trust each other and put our pennies together to have our financial institutions.
That's right.
And now we have a two, and then the third one, we can use that financial institution, our togetherness, and to influence conversation. That's how we can move in. We can't go to the continent with empty handed. So we need to go there with three minds. Unite ourselves, our togetherness, invest, bring our pennies together, put in our financial institutions, and then take that financial institution to participate in the development of the continent. And that's exactly what African Diaspora Council is doing. And we launched the first credit union, which is called African Diaspora Federal Credit Union, which was launched yesterday, the charter. And it's good. The ruby cutting is coming up in July. Stay tuned.
Oh, wow. So we got plenty to look forward to. So we're going to have you all back again.
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming. We will see you all soon. We gave you seven things to be a part of, but we'll see you African Day, and hopefully you can come out. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield.